You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Times Higher Education podcast. I'm Sarah Custer, and this week we'll discuss the long-awaited spending package for the U.S. government that Republicans and Democrats finally agreed on and was signed, albeit begrudgingly, by President Trump last week on March 23rd. Joining me today is our acting deputy news editor, Ellie Blathwell. And I also spoke earlier with John Aubrey Douglas, who is a senior research fellow for public policy and higher education at the Center for Studies in Higher Education at UC Berkeley, to get his reaction to the bill. But first, we'll start with you, Ellie. Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you.
So this bill promises $1.3 trillion to fund federal programs through September. Many of these programs include things like student financial aid, federal work study. It also includes funding for national research agencies like the National Institute of Health and the National Science Foundation. So, Ellie, I'd like to start with you. What was your initial reaction to this bill? What's in it, and more importantly, what's not in it?
Yeah, so I think the headline results are pretty good news, really, for the higher education sector. So it's an omnibus spending bill, so it doesn't just cover education and research, but on the education and research side of things, there have been quite a lot of increases. So the Department for Education's overall budget has gone up quite a lot. The financial aid programs that you mentioned, most of them have seen increases, and the research agencies as well. Most of them have had increases. So it looks like pretty good news, really. Sort of one area that it hasn't really addressed is the sort of the fate of Dreamers and the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. Mm-hmm. So that's still in limbo at the moment. And I think there'll be a lot of people that, you know, hoped that that bill might have addressed that.
Mm. And that was one of the things that was halting this process, wasn't it, is that Congress and was kind of debating about the future of funding for the DACA program, and they were also trying to get, well, President Trump was also trying to push through funding to build the wall along the U.S.-Mexico border, and neither one of those things are in the final spending bill.
Yeah, it's been just such a chaotic sort of long process, really, because obviously this bill is supposed to set the budget for, you know, from the beginning of October last year to the end of September this year. Mm. It's only just been announced about 6 months after the budget was supposed to kind of come into place. So that's what led to the government shutdown in January. Mm-hmm. You know, they had to have a kind of stopgap spending bill to deal with the delay. Yeah, there have been all sorts of issues in terms of, as you mentioned in the introduction, about, you know, Trump sort of hours before he signed it kind of threatened to veto it. So, there's been quite a lot of uncertainty and confusion around it. So I think there is a bit of relief that it's now finally in place.
Right. And it was kind of done in a last minute fashion as well, because midnight on the day that it was actually signed, it was triggered for another government shutdown to happen on March 23rd. So thankfully, it has been pushed through. And like you mentioned, there's a 3% rise in the Pell Grant funding. So that's for financial aid. So that's gone up to a little over £6,000 for Pell Grants. What's been the sector reaction so far? You're writing an article that's going to go in the magazine next week for this, Ellie. What are people saying so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think people in the sector recognise that, you know, it's always good to have funding increases, and they welcome that, and, you know, particularly welcome the fact that Congress has kind of pushed these through, despite the fact that Trump actually proposed for a lot of these programmes to be cut. Mm. But I think there are concerns over the delay in the budget process and the unpredictability of the announcements as well. So because Trump kind of, you know, he wanted to cut the Education Department budget by quite a lot. He talked about eliminating completely the Humanities and Arts Research Agencies and cuts elsewhere in research as well. And I think because of that, these research agencies and universities maybe didn't necessarily know if they were going to get funding increases or not. And so it means they're not able to plan. Clearly research agencies, you know, it's a long process in terms of scholars submitting grant proposals, them being accepted, and then the funding being given out. And I've heard from some people in the industry that actually, some agencies have had to kind of halt that process. They, you know, even grants that had been approved, the funding couldn't be released sort of in time, and obviously that disrupts academics' own research. There have also been, you know, concerns about the student aid, the fact that that's been announced so late, because obviously we're now coming towards the end of this current academic year.
Right.
Students will have already obviously applied for next academic year.
Right.
And that creates uncertainty for students in universities in terms of, you know, how much money they can be given. Although I have heard that in most cases, student aid is funded a year in advance. So mm-hmm. hopefully in most situations that won't be too much of an issue, but it's still kind of uncertainty.
Right, right. And are there any concerns about what happens after September? Has anybody mentioned that?
Yeah, well, I think they're expecting kind of more delays for next year's budget because of the midterm election. So that's in November. So they think that, you know, obviously the budget again, the next fiscal year starts October. That the following month there are the midterm elections, so they think that nothing's going to be pushed through before then. Mm. I spoke to Terry Hartle at the American Council on Education. He said, you know, it's quite normal for there to be delays in these sorts of budgets. He said it's been, you know, quite a long time since they've actually had one of these spending bills that's actually been approved by the beginning of the year. But he did say that it has been exacerbated by the sort of current administration and the fact that there's a lot of polarization and you know, different opinions within the government, and that's obviously delayed the process even more, and probably expect similar things next time round.
Right, and there were some, this has been talked about loads, and there are lots of cuts proposed. You mentioned that President Trump wanted to cut the budget for the Department of Education and completely eliminate some of the research bodies. Can we just talk through a little bit some of the proposed cuts? Because there was quite a bit of worry in the higher education field in the U.S.
He was going to cut the Department for Education budget by $3.6 billion, and it's actually increased by $3.9 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think he's increased funding, or the bill has increased funding for the National Science Foundation by about $7.7 billion, which is about a billion up from what was originally proposed.
Mm-hmm.
So they are quite big differences here that we're talking about for some of them. I mean, the Pell Grants you mentioned was a 3% rise, but actually in terms of amounts, that I think that's still considered like relatively small, just given
right.
the fact that the program doesn't get huge amounts of funding in the same way as these research agencies. So
this is all still federal higher education funding. As we know, higher education funding is also delegated to the state level. And Ellie, you recently wrote a story about that, about massive cuts to higher education funding at the state level. So can you just put this into a little bit of a national context?
Yeah, so I think in some ways this will be seen as quite welcome news, you know, given the fact that universities will be, you know, used to hearing that they're getting cuts in funding, you know, the fact that research funding and student aid funding, you know, will be increased will obviously be welcome. I mean, there's quite a different picture in different states. So overall, actually, if you kind of include all states' higher education budgets, there was a slight increase last year, but it was the smallest kind of rate of growth that they'd seen in 5 years. And then some states faced huge cuts. So I think North Dakota's universities faced the sort of biggest year-on-year cuts. I think it was down by about 14%. And so, yeah, universities, you know, in a lot of states and a lot of cases are kind of having to deal with you know, how to balance their budgets. And obviously, you know, if they can get a bit more funding for research, that will probably help.
My own state of Oklahoma was mentioned in your article about massive funding cuts over the past 5 years. They've seen the biggest cut. So, yeah, it's not great times for higher education funding at a state level. So, yeah, this spending package is surely some good news in what's definitely been a time of not so great news for universities in the U.S. But this obviously also sits in a global context, and you've written quite a bit on some research funding and support for universities in other countries. So can you just talk a little bit about where this sits on a global scale?
Yeah, so Canada recently reported its budget, and that saw a huge boost for research funding. So overall, they got a they announced a kind of $4 billion increase over the next 5 years. It's not as high as what was recommended in the Naylor report, but it's, you know, it's clearly a massive boost. They said it was the biggest single investment in research, in fundamental research, that the Canadian government has ever issued. Mm. Australia is having lots of issues at the moment in terms of university budgets being cut, and so there's a kind of, and then there's a big debate as well about student loans and student financing as well. So there are sort of concerns in Australia about the fact that universities aren't going to be as well off as they have been before. And then China obviously invests huge amounts of money in its universities and research. That is a country that's becoming a real sort of global power, you know, potentially quite big competition for places like the US, UK, Canada, Australia. They've got their world-class universities program. They've recently named a kind of small selection of universities that are going to become their kind of, you know, the beneficiaries of this program, and also various kind of specific subjects that will be included in that, and that just pumps in billions of dollars essentially into research and universities. So there's certainly quite a lot of competition for the US and other kind of English speaking countries.
Hmm. Well, I spoke earlier to John Aubrey Douglas, a senior research fellow at UC Berkeley, who said about 5 months ago that the U.S. is set to have a nightmare scenario on its hands if the proposed cuts to spending went through. I spoke with him to get his reaction to the final bill and to speak with him about
I think what we could say is that the Trump administration's and their priorities in the budget were refuted by the Congress, and through a deliberative process, it's quite a victory for the higher education sector.
And there was a fair amount of back and forth between Democrats and Republicans whenever they were crafting this bill. Can you just walk me through a little bit or talk a little bit about the proposals that were initially on the table and then what actually came out?
Well, the budget process in the United States is such that the president's administration proposes a budget, and then it goes to Congress, and there's a process of deliberation as to changes in that particular budget, compromises made. And there's a series of circumstances that have benefited, say, the Democrats in that process and higher education more generally. And that was first a shift. There was a cap on spending that Congress and the White House could pursue, and that was lifted. That was the first part of a process. And then constant pressure about having a bill passed in order to keep the federal government functioning. So that's the second phase that we've just recently gone through. And that opened up a process of greater compromise. And so what you see in the final bill that will be for fiscal year 2019 is dramatically different than what the budget proposal by the Trump administration presented. And the percentages are, you know, really quite significant. You can see, for example, there is no elimination of the National Endowment of the Humanities, which was originally proposed by the Trump administration's in the second iteration of their budget for the upcoming year 2019. They didn't eliminate it, but they had reduced it drastically. But the net result was a slight increase in their actual funding. And then more significantly, if you look at things like the National Institute of Health, there's now a planned 8.7% increase. For NASA, a 7.9% increase. In all those areas, the Trump administration had proposed significant reductions. And another significant area is the National Science Foundation, which will see almost a 4% increase in their budget.
Hmm. So you said this was a victory for higher education in the United States. Are there any, is there anything missing in this spending bill?
Well, I think the argument would be that while there's some significant increases this year, there's been a slow, you know, there have been erosions in the budget in the past that haven't kept up with inflation. So while there's significant gains in this particular budget, you know, past budgets have been lacking in terms of their total funding. At least that would be what, you know, the advocates of funding for, say, academic science or for financial aid. But these are pretty significant gains. And I think, you know, we can say that one, the budget process helped in that they come about with this result. I think also, though, you know, you have to point to the lobbying power of various constituencies, and you have to think about the budget with different constituencies. There's sort of those who really care about access and financial aid, which is one component of the federal budget for higher ed. Then there are other constituencies that are very forceful related to science funding. And on the science funding, you know, you tend to have greater support from Republicans who see funding of science often, with a few important exceptions, they see the funding of science as a form of corporate welfare. It's, you know, feeds into both health, but also various industries and in support of, whether it's aeronautics or pharmaceuticals.
Mm-hmm.
Democrats tend to be a little bit more focused on access and financial aid issues. So in all of this, there are different constituencies that are fighting for the budget, but I would say that the higher ed community has a series of lobbying groups that had some kind of effect in this budget process. And that's something, this dynamic doesn't really exist in other parts of the world that I'm aware of, at least, in which, you know, you have a ministerial structure. You don't have the same kind of lobbying force by the higher education community. So I think that's an important component in what in the final result.
And I know that this is for fiscal year 2019, so this kind of essentially ends at the end of September, and so we'll kind of be back to the drawing board this time next year, maybe, if not even earlier. So how confident are you that these changes are going to be sustainable? Well, not changes, but these funding, funding promises will be sustainable.
Well, you know, it really depends on partly on what happens in the midterm elections. And at least at the moment, it appears that the Democrats could make some very significant gains in the House, even potentially taking control of it, or at least having a majority. In the Senate, there's a similar kind of question as to what will result. So the political dynamics, I think, point to greater Democratic influence through the budget process coming up. So that would be a more optimistic side of things. Mm-hmm. I do think there is a kind of an odd irony in all of this, in that Republicans have run heavily on the theme of reducing government spending and deficit spending. And, you know, we've gone through a series of actions led by Republicans, largely, principally with the tax cuts, this major tax reform that will have projections of significant decreases in federal income, and along with a budget deal that was kind of forced, you know, at least you're put into an environment in which you have to make deals in order to keep the federal government running, that has resulted in, you know, some fairly significant increases in overall federal spending. So the net result is a kind of a question is, well, where are we going in terms of our overall federal deficit and the balance between income for the federal government and spending? So although I think there's an optimistic feeling going into the next fiscal year with those changes in the political environment, one has to kind of wonder about the rationality of a system in which we'll reduce significantly, it appears, federal income, spending even more. And I don't know where the political dynamics will fall on that.
And also, so you've got the deficit issue on one side of this situation, and then on the other side, we're seeing increasing enrollments in higher education, which will also put a strain on whatever spending increases the government has allowed higher education providers. What do you think about that? Is this enough to answer that demand?
I think there's an ongoing, on the financial aid side, there's an ongoing worry and concern that, for example, Pell Grants, which for low-income Americans, you know, only still covers around a third of the cost, and that those, you know, those, the overall financial aid, while there is this increase in this fiscal year, is not really keeping up with the overall needs. And this isn't, of course, in relationship to rising costs in higher ed, so there's a debate about that. But I think concerned that the financial aid structure is still not quite robust enough. You know, when you think about increases in overall enrollment, you know, which relate to, you know, United States population at a steady pace, not in huge jumps, but there's a big difference between, say, California and Vermont, for example, in terms of just the scale, but also whether there's actual increases in population. Another would be, you know, Pennsylvania, which is only growing in population. So the problems are very sometimes more specific to the states themselves. California is growing in population and enrollment demand, and that demand is driven not just by population increases and the number of high school students who graduate and then look to go to college. It's also just overall demand for other kinds of services, whether it's continuing education or public service programs or extension programs, these kinds of things. So there are different stories in different parts of the state. The federal government has traditionally said that it's only going to limit what it does in the current political world post-1960s. Financial aid and academic-based research. And I think there's always been some question among some whether there should be a step federal role in light of the budget problems they're facing many states, such as California. I'm only focusing on California. It is for now because it is the largest state in the union. It has what is said to be about the sixth largest economy in the world. But if you look at the state budget situation, much of its overall budget, even though it has improved with the economy, you know, moving up, improving since the Great Recession, there's these competing demands for state funding, including mostly entitlements, including health care, pensions, these kinds of things are eating up more and more of the budget, meaning there's less discretionary budget, which is usually where higher education is funded.
But, I mean, undoubtedly, the issues that California is facing are issues that every other state across the country is facing as well, where to place higher education on their spending priorities.
Correct. With some differences, as I said, related to overall population size and demand. You know, in the United States, there are some differences in the states. Most students who grow up in a home state go to college in their home state. And it's a correlation that is, it does differ if you're in the Northeast and you are in a state like Vermont or Massachusetts, which is usually a net gain, usually state. But there are some big differences in scale and whether you've got really significant increases in enrollment demand.
One of the biggest issues around this spending bill was the future of the DACA program, and that is notably absent from the bill that was signed by President Trump last week. Do you have any comments about where you see that program going?
One can be hopeful. I think the process changed, or the dynamics changed. President Trump appeared to be using the DACA issue as a bargaining chip in order to get money specifically for the wall between Mexico and the United States, but perhaps in other aspects of the negotiations on budgets and other things. And there was a lot of pressure to do something because he had set up a deadline in which DACA recipients would no longer be eligible for those for that status. But then there was a series of court decisions that basically suspended the decision to end DACA. So it's in this kind of a limbo, but it still exists, and the students still have that status, and the pressure to basically make a deal was no longer there. And so I don't know all the dynamics, but apparently in the budget process, there must have been some kind of a decision by the Democrats not to try to put this into this particular process. So the net result is it is still on books. It's still, DACA students still have that status. But at some point, there will have to be some kind of negotiated deal. And I'm hopeful that that will occur.
And that was John Aubrey Douglas at UC Berkeley. That's all we've got time for this week. Thanks for joining me, Ellie.
Thank you.
If you've got any comments or suggestions for our podcast, please do get in touch. You can email me at sarah.custer@timeshighereducation.com. We'll see you next week.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.